You're listening to the Why Big Football Show, the Irish soccer show by the fans for the fans. If you want to get involved with the show, advertise, or even sponsor, drop us an email to theworldstalking@gmail.com. That's theworldstalking@gmail.com. Don't forget to check us out on Twitter, @theworldstalking, without the G. We'll chat to you soon. Come on, the boys in green. The days are counting down. The European Championships are ever so close. A couple of friendlies, though, to look forward to beforehand, with the boys in green taking on Bosnia and Hungary. This is the Why Big Football Show. I'm Dave O'Grady. It's a big one tonight, as we're joined by FAI Chief Executive John Delaney. Thanks a million, John, for joining us on the Why Big Football Show.
No, pleasure, Dave. It's always a pleasure to speak to support.
Brilliant stuff. We're also delighted to be joined by our usual John in Dublin. John, thanks a million for joining us.
Hey, Dave. Hey, John. How you doing?
And we're joining from the first time by Gerard Blair. Now, Gerard, you're the chairman of the Republic of Ireland Soccer Supporters Club, the Western branch. You guys are based in Galway.
Yes, David, thanks for having me on. Yes, we've set up a club there over the last couple of months. Myself, when I very first moved down to Galway, I'm really from Belfast, but married and living down in Galway now. I started just running buses on my own and whatever else. It was just like the natural progression to start.
Yeah.
And organize a club.
And how's the supporters levels going? How many guys have you got up there?
Yeah, well, we have about 40 to 45 at the minute. The last bus we had 30, 36 going there. But you know, there's a real hotbed of our support, you know, in Galway and the West in general. And I thought, you know, that was something to tap into. You know, it's with the success of the rugby lads.
Yeah, yeah.
Connacht again in the European Cup. So, you know, it's the place is alive down here with sport. And
you're bringing them to support the boys in green. Fair play to you, dear.
It's as much of a social sort of a thing as well, obviously, when there's no matches going.
Brilliant.
So we're going to have a group of core fans together.
Fantastic stuff, Ger. We're also joined by Philip, our man in Stockholm. Philip, we're delighted to have you back on the show, and I know you've been doing work this week. You've been portraying the boys in green to the world. You've been reporting for Reuters on Ireland's team and Ireland's chances in the Euros.
Yeah, basically what happens is the Reuters news agency makes a package before all the big tournaments, Dave. So they do a profile of the manager of each team, the prospects of the team. We pick out one player to watch. This time around we picked out Robbie Keane. God knows it might be our last chance to pick out Robbie.
Yeah.
And then we try to second guess trap. We try to do what every football fan in Ireland is doing at the moment and say, okay, who are the 25, 26 players most likely to go? And then we profile them in about 80 words or so. So all that came out there recently, and we had a good chat there with Ray Houghton as well. And Ray was telling me he thinks that Ireland at Euro 2012 are going to lift the gloom. And I really hope he does, because if Ireland comes second in their group and England win their group, my last match at these Euros will be an England-Ireland quarterfinal in Kiev.
I love it. And coming to yourself, John Delaney, you know, on as Philip was saying, Ray Houghton was saying that he believes this Irish team is going to be able to lift the gloom. And, you know, going to the Euros, I suppose what we're hoping for, some people are saying it's just going to be good performances, but some people are saying that we might be able to get out of the group. Would you go along with that?
Well, the first thing, I mean, Ray Houghton's right. I think the players understand it, and we understand it, that we've given the country a lot of hope. And the great thing about qualifying in November is you've got 7 months to speak about going there. It's not like you qualify in November, you've got to play the finals in December. So we've got 7 months for people to save money to travel, and we've got a lot of Irish fans there. We've got a lot of people who've, I suppose, prepared to make their way over to Poland and hopefully onto Ukraine to support the team. So we have lifted the gloom. There's no question about that. And the only thing I'd say about the players, and your question is, will we get out of the group? I mean, Richard Dunne, Shea Given, Robbie Keane, Damien Duff, John O'Shea, players like that are not going over to make up the numbers. They've worked very hard to get the Irish team to qualify, and they're not going over to make up the numbers. And we've got a manager in Trapattoni and Tardelli as his assistant, who are used to achieving. And from Trapattoni's perspective, he's very confident that we get out of the group. And that's what you need. I mean, you need to have a strong mentality. I mean, we're in the last 16 of the top teams in Europe, and you don't go over there to make up the numbers. You go over there to qualify out of the group. And that's what the players want. That's what the managers want. That's what the supporters want, and certainly that's what the association wants.
And John, you know, how important did you think it was that when it was announced that we were going to be playing in Poland, I think for Irish fans, I think there was sighs of relief, the fact that this is a real possibility now of, you know, being able to have a complete Irish majority in every match. It'll be terrific for the fans.
Well, it was brilliant for the supporters. And I mean, I didn't care who we got. I was more concerned about where we got. And being drawn in Poland, primarily for the association, for the supporters, has been brilliant. I mean, I was there in 1994 as a supporter of the Giant Stadium when we beat Italy. I was there in Stuttgart when we beat England. And particularly, I mean, those were 50 or 60,000 Irish there.
Yeah.
And I know it's often spoken about, but the supporters, the players really value the supporters. There's no doubt about that. They're the real 12th man. And I know that when we're in Poland, we're going to have huge support. I think maybe 20,000 Irish will travel to the tournament for sure. And for speaking to the Polish, when I've been out there looking at the stadiums and making sure the hotels and all the rest are sorted out, the Polish are going to support Ireland as their second.
I like the sound of that, yeah.
They really are. Well, I mean, there's such an affinity between Poland and Ireland. There's so many Poles who come over here. We're very similar in many of our ways and our habits and our cultures. So there's going to be a great support for the Irish team out there from the Irish supporters, but also from the locals. So I think when we're getting to Poland and being drawn there was a huge benefit logistically for the supporters, logistically for us, but also in terms of the support we're going to get out there. It's easier for the Irish fans to get there. And of course, with the connections of Polish public, I think they'll come out to pick us as their second team.
And just, John, on the whole ticketing situations, because I know from speaking to a lot of Irish fans and a lot of Irish fans on that have come on the programme, they had been having problems getting tickets to these Euro games. Now, I know the FAI and that had been constantly on trying to get more and more tickets for Irish fans, but I think it's a case where still a lot of Irish supporters have been left ticketless.
There is, I mean, I suppose it's a supply and demand problem, and we would never have enough tickets. But I suppose one of my disappointments was, and I mean, I'm very positive about UEFA. UEFA, in general, are a very good organisation to work with. But I'm not too sure whether the UEFA portal worked out as well as it should.
Mm.
That's the feedback I've had. But I would have preferred, had we got the 6,000 tickets for each game initially, to give it to the association. Because in general, we know our supporters very well. We know that the hardcore fans are travelling to our away matches. You want them sorted out first, then you want your season ticket holders and vantage seat holders to be accommodated. And effectively, half the tickets were given to us directly, but half UEFA care for the portal. I know a lot of people had a lot of difficulties staying on the portal, getting their passcodes in or whatever it would be. That's something I intend to kind of raise with UEFA after the tournament. I just wonder, should they just give the tickets directly to the National Association to know their fan base pretty well and let them then deal with the distribution? Now, we worked very, very hard to secure extra tickets. And I think we got an extra 2,300 in general for the three games. And there were some tickets left over because Italy hadn't taken their full allocation. And that'll bring us, I think, maybe to close on 10,000 tickets per game that'll be distributed to Irish fans.
Yeah.
That still leaves a lot of Irish people who are going to travel without tickets.
Yeah.
And
the ticket,
I mean, my job, as I see it, is to get as many as we can for the fans.
Yeah, and the tickets, John, you know, I mean, obviously we haven't been to a European Championships for 24 years or that, but it seems too long, it's probably fair to say. But, you know, you guys have obviously a situation with the tickets to juggle. I mean, what way did you guys distribute? No doubt it was it to the block bookers or to the guys that go to the away games?
Well, for me, it has to be the way fans first, because, I mean, there's no easy way of doing it, but for the away fans first, because they've travelled to Armenia, they've travelled to Slovakia, they've travelled to Estonia, to Russia, and it's important that we would respect the away fans first, because they spend hard money, or good money, in a very hard way to follow their country all over the world. And then we would look to the season ticket holders, the block bookers, and the bandage seat holders and trying to accommodate their requests. And it's loads of vicious stuff at the end because you're never going to have enough.
Yeah.
The demand has been so high. By the way, it's a great problem to have.
Yeah.
You know, the Scottish FA, the Welsh FA, the IFA would love to have the same problem. But trying to accommodate the away fans first and then dealing, I think, and I've got above, I mean, I was in Croagh-Patrick, we walked Croagh-Patrick the other night, climbed it the other day. I said, I mean, the one place that won't be asked for a ticket is the top of Croagh-Patrick. It was.
Yeah.
I was in Mountjoy Jail yesterday, visiting some of our the prisoners there. We went and we helped them with in terms of doing their Kickstart 1 and Kickstart 2 courses. And even in Mountjoy, a few of the prison wardens are heading over, they would ask me for tickets. So no matter where you go, there's requests. But I'll tell you what, the problem you'd love to have every 2 years, going to Brazil for the World Cup or going to France in 2016 for the Euros, it's a great problem to have. It just breaks your heart at times when you're not able to give everybody who wants to see Ireland play at the Euros or any major tournament tickets to go to.
Certainly. And coming to our other John in Dublin. John, you yourself from the Why Big forums and the Irish fans, I think there's a lot of people on that forum that are in that situation, as John Delaney says there, that they haven't been able to secure tickets, but a lot of them are going over anyway.
Well, yeah, that's right. We put up a few questions there for some of the fans that you might be able to answer, John. I don't know. A lot of them came up about tickets. It seems to be a recurring theme with different matches. Like, we've had tickets issues with tickets for Zilnia and Andorra, obviously, in the last campaign, and even going back to Paris, even though there was 8,000 tickets we got, there was still some fans kind of that had been to away matches that still somehow didn't get them. I was wondering, would you be willing to implement a proper away fans ticketing scheme? There's one proposed there on the forum, and I think some of their fans liaison officers were talking about it, that would avoid all this confusion. I mean, I think Scotland have a government place whereby, you know, you get a credit, could even be a small charge for every year, which people wouldn't mind.
Yeah.
But just there is still people slipping through the radar that have been to the majority of the away games and home games and haven't got them. So I'm just wondering, would you consider...
John, I'd agree with that. There's no doubt I'd agree with that. I mean, and Andorra was probably more difficult. No matter what you had for Andorra, you were never going to keep people happy because they gave us such a small allocation and that game should never have been played there. I think the Euros we've done well because we know our fan base a lot better than we used to. And that's by engaging directly with the fans. But I think going forward, there needs to be some, point system allocated to people who go to home games and away games. And we run that on a database. I'd like to work very closely with the supporters on that because I want it to be open and transparent so that you can see it and understand it. That's something I think post the Euros will engage directly with the supporters on. I don't think there's too much negativity in terms of the Euros because I think it's well regarded that the away fans have been treated with preferential treatment, which is still like to have it done on a point system that X amount of points if you travel away, X amount of points if you can prove you went to the home games. On that basis, that's how the allocations will be done.
Yeah, it's certainly an interesting one there. And just coming to yourself, Ger, on this, you know, you yourself, you're running that new supporters club, and it's great to see us having a strong branch out the west. And of course, you're a Belfast man running things out there, I think, one of the things I know for a lot of Irish fans based in Ireland, Ger, they'll probably go into Poland, they'll be getting the chance to meet up with Irish fans from all over the world, because we've seen from previous World Cups and that there's a lot of Irish fans out there.
Yes, look, everybody knows we're all over the place. But just getting back to starting the club, we had a lot of help from the Galway United, the Gus lads. So just give them a bit of a thank you.
Yeah.
Go ahead. But yes, you know, I've been traveling to the Ireland games from Belfast for the last 10 years. You know, so it's fantastic, and the amount of people in the north supporting the national team is. It's crazy.
It is quite crazy. And actually, I'll put that to John Delaney. John, you know, there's an unbelievable amount of fans in the north. And I know when I mentioned to a lot of them about having yourself on the programme, I mean, I was getting some tongue-in-cheek questions for you. I know Ryan Kelly had put this up on Twitter. He was asking your opinion on staging an underage, maybe international game at the Brandywell or something, because you have the likes of James McLean, Shane Duffy, Darren Gibson, Unano Kane and a number of former Irish internationals now hailing from Derry. Would it be worthwhile? And of course, I mean, obviously Derry City are an FAI club, but no doubt for an Ireland underage match to be hosted up there, it would require, I'd say, a lot of permission from the IFA and things like that.
And the first thing I'd say to you, I mean, I know what it means to be a Republic of Ireland supporter living in the north of Ireland. I think it's fantastic. I remember when Derry first came into the league, my dad was heavily involved. And the emotion of for Derry to play in our league was something that was very important to the people up there and to a certain part of the population. And I know the boys from Coleraine come down for our games and all the many supporters who come down to support Ireland. I really admire them, as sometimes I would say. And we've obviously had a difficulty with the IFA in terms of the whole
player eligibility,
eligibility would declare for us. And you know, we took that all the way to the Court of Arbitration of Sport, and we won that, thankfully, because I believe every player should have the right to pick which country or which national association he wants to play for, he or she wants to play for. And we all know there's a constituency of people in the north of Ireland who will play for Republic of Ireland. That's what they want to do. Darren Gibson is one example of that, and there's been many more since.
And there wouldn't be a, there wouldn't be a, you guys wouldn't try to maybe slip in an underage matchup in the Brandywell?
I think that would be a bit more difficult. I mean, that would require the agreement of the IFA, and it's a very sensitive issue with them. And I know it is. We meet them quite a bit when we're away, the IFA lads. And we get on with them pretty well, but there is this huge issue about eligibility. They know where we stand at it. We know where they stood at it. But we went to the Court of Arbitration Sport, and we won it. And it was a big case, and we won it out. It was a difficult case, and we won it. I remember that day when we won it, and I felt that was really a landmark day, because in the past, some of the players didn't know whether it would be taken to court or whether it wouldn't.
Yeah.
But because we won it, it now means that everybody knows that if you want to play for the Republic of Ireland, you can declare and you can go on and do so. And I think that was a landmark case. It was one of the I was pleased about, because it gave the players a right of choice. Now, playing an underage international match up there is a little bit different, because that's a sensitive one, I think. And I mean, personally, on a personal basis, you'd like to do it, but I think you've got to respect that it might be seen as going a bridge too far for the IFA, who actually run football in the North of Ireland.
Absolutely. And I want to bring Philip in on a point. Philip, we were talking about fans that are not based in Ireland, like yourself, and I know we have a lot of fans on the Why Big Football show that are from all over the world that come to support the boys in green whenever they get a chance. And I think, as we were talking about, it's one of the advantages that this Irish team has, you know, regarding the diaspora. You know, we had Barry Maguire on the programme 2 weeks ago playing in the Dutch league, telling us about how much he wanted to play for Ireland. Philip, it's a good complaint to have, I think.
Yeah, well, it basically means that for anywhere we play in the world, for the Irish team, it's going to be a home game, because, you know, when Ireland were drawn against Estonia to play that playoff game, I don't think Ryanair ever sold as many tickets to Tallinn as they did an hour after that draw.
Yeah.
And the same thing, even we were all down in Paris that time. I wasn't working that night. I was down there as a fan. So that's what happens. And I'm sure John will remember years ago when Latvia and Lithuania had just come upon the scene, it seemed that we drew them in every qualifying campaign.
That's right. There's a great story about that, would you believe it, because Jack was managing Ireland at the time.
Yeah.
And he didn't know Latvia and Lithuania were beside each other. And he couldn't understand how you wouldn't fly from Ireland to Latvia and back home and go out to Lithuania, whichever way the games worked. He didn't understand that you could actually stay in one country and hop to the other. And that was the kind of the lack of understanding of how Europe was at the time. But we used to draw them a lot. And you're right, now, because, I mean, Europe's got so big, and we're in Kazakhstan next September. And I keep saying that to everyone in the FBI, but the Euros are over, we're going to Kazakhstan. that's the truth of it. And hopefully Kazakhstan brings us to Brazil, which is the other side of the world. And that's the great thing about following Ireland. And I can hear that, you know, from the lads from speaking tonight. By the way, I want to mention the lads of the West Formula Club, we're completely behind that. Absolutely thrilled about that. Jerry Reardon, who works in the FAI, has been in contact with the club, and we're hoping to come and launch that. You know, I'd love to make my own and bring one of the former players. One of the great things of following the Irish team is you get to see parts of the world which you wouldn't see only for you're an Irish football supporter. I mean, we've been to Armenia, as I say, Kazakhstan next September, Estonia. These are parts of the world that people would never travel to. But because you're following your country, you love your country, you're following your country abroad, and you see that tricolour flying, and you face it with, say, minutes before, seconds before the game, you sing along the beam. They're brilliant moments. And that can be done in Germany, which are popular countries, in France and all those. But you also see parts of the world which you've never revisit or would never have been in, but for your love for your country and your football team.
Well, that's actually one of those things, John, that it means an awful lot to people who've left the country. Now, I left the country 12 or 13 years ago. I left by choice. But there's an awful lot of people leaving the country now, and unfortunately, it's not by choice. And the way the ticketing works at the moment, when I left Ireland, I had, you know, no more rights to buy tickets in Lansdowne Road. Basically, you go to the bottom of the queue. And in the end, in Paris, we actually got tickets to the French Football Association, because obviously you had a million applications for tickets there. So it's just, you know, it'd be nice if on some level the FAI could maybe take note of that fact when you start to look at the ticketing policy again, that not everybody can attend all the away games anymore, and they certainly can't even attend the home games in certain cases.
That's a great point. Great point. I never thought of it before, to be honest with you. It's a great point, and I think when we're sitting down probably post the Euros and working out with the supporters different ways of allocating tickets, that needs to be taken on board for sure. No doubt about it.
And certainly, I think as fans as well, it should be probably taken on board that, you know, we have to be a bit more international about it. We were kind of lucky. There's a sort of a small Irish community in Sweden, and we were very quickly able to pull ourselves together and to get sorted out for Tallinn and Paris and the other away games that we've been to in the last while. But maybe it's something that the fans need to look at as well in terms of getting organised. But that might mean that Jerry has to leave Galway and move to Latvia.
Belfast, Galway, Latvia. Yes,
fair play. Just speaking about the international side of things, lads. And John, you know, we have a lot of Irish players that are playing abroad as well. I mean, we see Noel King selecting young Mara, who's based in the US. We had Barry Maguire on the program, who plays for VVV Venlo in the Dutch league. And obviously, these guys are coached very differently and a different style of football to what, say, the Irish lads in the English Premier League or the Irish lads in Ireland would be coached. Are the FAI, and no doubt you guys are all over these lads who are playing elsewhere, especially with the likes of Robbie now in LA, Aiden playing in Russia and that kind of thing. No doubt you guys are taking on board Irish lads that are playing across the continent.
I mean, well, players have brought to your attention. Barry Maguire is an interesting one in case, because he's obviously playing in Holland. And we brought him over for one of the games in the Amoeba just to make it clear to him that if he's interested in playing for Ireland, that we'd be supportive towards him. And his parents came over. And what I would always do is that when players want to declare for Ireland, we bring them over, meet their parents. I did it with young Duffy from Derry. I did it with Darren Gibson. We did it with Aidan McGeady as well. And it's important that you impress upon the family that if the player declares for you, that the association will support that decision, because sometimes it can be contentious. If you're talking about playing styles, we've brought Bim Kuvermans in for the last 4 years in terms of looking at playing a more continental style of football at underage level, passing the ball, more flexibility, the best against the best, for the best is the philosophy which we've brought in. And I think we'll see the benefits of that over the coming years, because we've got development squads at league levels from 11, under 11s up to 14s, and at regional levels from 14s to 17s all over the country. And I think if you bring that philosophy, that European philosophy, married with this great energy that Irish players or the British-style players always brought in terms of commitment to the game, if you get that right balance, I think you've got a great chance over the longer haul achieving better results internationally at all levels.
Yeah, and just coming to John in Dublin on that, I know there was a lot of Irish fans that wanted to put questions to JD about the coaching style of things, because I know we had Dominic Foley and that on the programme before, talking about the different styles of coaching, but you've been talking to a lot of Irish fans, haven't you, John?
Yeah, well, there was a couple of them on the forum. There's a few of them, two or three, are actually do coaching and do it at grassroots level. And they found it's very hard. They've gone out, whatever, 11, 12, trying to get the kids to play passing game. And your parents on the sideline kind of screaming just to hoof it or kick it up or anything like that. And they're basically just thinking overall that they're possibly not going enough into grassroots football in terms of to get players playing the right way. And you know, the FAI could maybe roll it out a bit further, maybe than development squads, and trying to get people right across the board to bring that into it. And things like in Barcelona, you hear, or in Spain, they're not allowed to play 11 aside, up to 12, 13, maybe even 14, all about getting more touches on the ball, because the smaller the pitch, the more touches they get. So maybe, you know, is that something the FAI could look into doing a bit more focus on in the future?
Well, we've been looking at John. It's a good point. I mean, what we've been trying to do is impressed upon the schoolboys clubs that to make it less competitive at a younger age and more about flexibility and enjoying the game. You can get competitive when you get to 13, 14, 15 years of age, but the more when you're younger you enjoy the touch of the ball, passing the ball, and less about winning and more about enjoying. That's the philosophy we're pushing, I suppose, across to the schoolboys clubs. So there's a balance in there, because schoolboys clubs have developed great footballers for Ireland over the years. So what we tried to do, what we have put in place, is development squads at under 11s, 12s, 13s and 14s in each league. And that's more about enjoying the game, understanding the game, and not about winning. And then when you get to the regions from 14 to 17, to get the best regional players playing against each other, and the best regional players then end up playing underage international football for Ireland, and then of course they go on maybe to play the League of Ireland or go across the water. We should talk about a culture change here that doesn't come easily. I think we've made a lot of progress in it, but it doesn't come overnight.
Yeah.
And kind of convincing, and I've got a great regard for school boys football in general because they really are the custodians of our game in many ways, but convincing some school boys coaches that you don't have to win at underage levels, but the kid enjoying themselves. And, you know, some players are small when they're younger and they become late developers. And because you're a big lad when you're 10 years of age doesn't mean that you should be picked every time. And when I was young, I used to be, go on, John, knock it long.
Yeah.
Knock the ball long. You know, knock it long, son. You should be pass it and enjoy the game. And if you get kids to enjoy it and pass it and not feel upset if they've made a mistake, in other words, encourage them to make a mistake, you know, just don't worry about it, keep passing, keep trying. I think that's the philosophy you'd like to get in at Andre.
Yeah, well,
completely.
I think that's, making some progress, but
a lot of people want it, and I think it's going to take a little bit longer, but we certainly are, I know, making progress from where we were. And you've got to kind of get that culture change in people. Listen, it's not about medals or trophies when they're younger. And for the parents, with the best respect, I'm a parent myself, so I prefer to see my lad pass it and make a mistake rather than kick the ball long into a corner. That's the way I would look at it. I watch him most Saturdays when I get down to water to see him play. And if he makes a mistake, but he's trying to do the right thing, I think that's better than knocking it long or having to kick it out or trying to win a cup or a trophy at 11 or 12 years of age. I prefer them to enjoy the game at that level because, I mean, when you get older, it's about winning, and we all know that. It's about being fit and competitive and tactics and all that comes with it. But you learn your best instincts, I think, when you're younger. And if you can let kids kind of learn those instincts. I mean, Johnny Giles and I often speak about football, and they learned their skills at street football. You know, when bigger kids were coming at them, how you went past them, how you avoided the tackle, and I suppose street football is no longer given the times that we live in. But allowing kids to express themselves on the pitch and to enjoy it would be something I'd be very, very positive about, particularly when they're younger.
Yeah, you mentioned Waterford there, John, and we had a question put into our Facebook, I think it was. They were saying, would it be possible to ask John Delaney about his memories of Waterford's FAI Cup final win over St. Pat's in 1980, a day the Blues fans will never forget, our first Cup win since our victory in the 1937 Cup final. John, your father, Joe, I think, was he president of the club at the time?
I was chairman of the club. I'll never forget it. It was the greatest moment for me domestically in Irish football. I was, 13 years of age, and your facts are 100% right. Waterford have only ever won the FAI Cup twice, 1937 and 1980. Brian Gardner scored a header. They beat St. Pat's 1-0. God rest Jackie Jemison. He was centre forward that day. Brilliant footballer. Absolutely brilliant footballer. And Al Finucane, one of the greatest Irish footballers who never went to England, centre back, he marked him, and I'll never forget the day. It was in Derrymount Park. There was a big crowd there, maybe 29,000, 30,000. And Waterford had been very fortunate in the Cup semi final because they played Limerick and they were 1-0 down. They got a penalty and they missed it, and they got a second penalty. A little lad called Larry Murray, who used to play for Shamrock Rovers, came down to Waterford and he won both penalties, if I remember. And then Tommy Jackson, who was the player manager, he used to play for Manchester United, took the second penalty, 1-1, went to a replay, was there in Middletown. They were 3-0 Waterford, and then they came back to 3-2, and Waterford hung on. So I think
fantastic.
They were destined to win. They all was brilliant, and it was 1980. They'd lost the cup the year before to Dundalk, 2-0. Hilary Carlisle scored, Peter Thomas made a mistake, the great Peter Thomas was goalkeeper. So they came back the year after to win the cup, and that was chairman. It's something I still have a tape of it. Brian Gardner, funnily, sent me a tape again of it only 2 or 3 weeks ago. I mean, they're the memories you're like. I mean,
yeah,
I'm sure people listening tonight are Galway fans or Shamrock Rovers fans, Shelburne fans, Cork fans, whatever, Derry fans. Like, your memories are based on your youth. And when I was a young lad, my father instilled in me my love for Waterford, but in particular my love for the Irish team. And I've always said I was very fortunate as a young lad experience that, because it instilled in me my love for the game. And you can't invent your love for the game. You either love it or you don't love it. And I was very fortunate that as a young boy, that every Saturday morning, I was born in Waterford, but we grew up in Tipperary, and Al Finucane and a fellow Coochie Hall, who lived in Limerick, who were playing for Waterford, just come to our house. And then Dad would drive the car, and two players would be in the car with me. And we might go to St. Mel's, we might go to Milltown, go to Kilcone Park, wherever it was. And it was a great education for me every Sunday in my life as a young lad to see League of Ireland football. And I still have a huge love for League of Ireland football based on being a young lad following water all over Ireland.
It's incredible. It really is, John. And just before we let you go, you know, on a few light-hearted points, I know a lot of Irish fans were, there was uproar midweek, I think, when a couple of articles were read about, you said, regarding points being bought at the Euros. Now, I know you're kind of famous for the ties going into the crowd and a couple of pints after the game, but is this true what they say? There'll be no bar tab in Poland.
But to be fair to you, I've done a drinks awareness.
All right,
fair enough. A lot of people have drinks awareness, so I couldn't be saying at a drinks awareness that you're going to buy a drink. But I was told afterwards that you can drink in moderation. But so trust me, if I'm around Poland, I bump into Irish fans, of course I'll buy my point. Because it's actually my way, and I mean in a genuine way, of saying thank you and recognising the fact that they spend so much money coming supporting the team. I think Slovakia was a great example when about 1,000 Irish fans were stuck in Bratislava, and we bought the train to bring them to Zelina. We put some money behind the bar for refreshments or a few points or whatever. That's a very simple way of saying thank you for following your country and spending so much money to follow your country. And if I bump into a few Irish fans in Poland, of course I'll buy them a few points once it's in moderation, of course, yeah. The document that we launched.
Of course. As they say, JD will be buying a couple of pints once they're once promoting sensible drinking and once they're in moderation. But before you go, John, what kind of things do you do outside of football? Because I know it clearly sounds like your hobby is what you do, but what do you do to relax when you're not working? Do you do anything bizarre? Anything like surfing or anything?
Very little, Dave. I have to be honest with you. I mean, I love football. It's my life. It's something that, as a young lad playing with St. Michael's and Tipperary as a kid, or following Waterford, or following Ireland. And I mean, see, football, you could do football 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know, tonight you can watch Chelsea and Newcastle, you know, Monday night you watch Man United, Man City. Last week you watch the Champions League. You follow the Irish players, you want to read up about them. There's 2,600 clubs around the country. It's well known, they're visited, I think, over 1,000 over the last number of years. I love engaging with the grassroots and meeting people involved in various clubs around the country. So, I love the game. It's part of me. I keep myself fit, to be fair. It's one thing I do. I run 6 kilometres, maybe 3-4 times a week when I get the opportunity on a treadmill or wherever it would be, just to keep myself right. But even when I'm doing that on a treadmill, I've got Sky Sports on to see what's happening in football. So,
yeah.
I mean, I know that, listen, most of your audience are great lads that support the Irish team. They love football. But trust me, before I took this role, I was a supporter. And when I leave this role, I'll be a supporter again following the Irish team. That's what's in you. It's either in you or not. It's the point I'm probably trying to get across. And there's probably not a moment in my time that I'm not really thinking about football or how to improve Irish football, are thinking about some result in some game. Even tonight, I was wondering how Pat Fennell's team were going. I think they were winning 2-1 last I checked against Aberdeen. So that's me really. I love the game, and when I leave this role, whenever it is or however it is, I'll still be following football for the rest of my life.
Fantastic. And like, is there any type of music you like, John? Or you know, do you like Irish music, traditional country? Does JD rock out to a bit of Shania Twain or anything like that?
I like a bit of the old Irish stuff. I do. You know,
yeah.
I wouldn't be quite a rebel singer, but I like that bit of stuff before a game when you get the crowd going. You know, I really do. You know, when they stand up for the boys in green, sign the hair in the back of your head. Goes up, doesn't it? You know,
yeah.
Because I was there in '88 for all the games as a fan in Germany. I was there in 1994. I followed the team to Albania, Latvia, Lithuania, Malta. And we qualified in '89. So I've been all over the world following the team. So I think the Irish songs are probably the ones that you favour most. Yeah, of course, I've been to U2 concerts in the past. I Would Like You To as a band. But I think the Irish songs and, you know, a bit of the Dubliners and a bit of that, that would kind of get people emotive about your country and supportive about your country, because probably when you're away as an Irish supporter for years, having a few pints in the pub, there was always the traditional Irish songs that were sang. And that's probably closest to me, because it's probably linked to your Irishness, your love for your country,
yeah,
and following your team.
Yeah, Philip, just before I let John go, you probably feel the same, you know, when you hear the Irish songs. And no doubt if you were at the Euros or at an away match with John, there'd be a good old sing-song there.
I probably would. It's the usual thing that the further we get away from Ireland, the more Irish we get. You know? And John is right. It is the kind of thing that stirs the blood here, you know. We have a Gaelic football club here in Stockholm, and there's nothing better than having a tournament or whatever, and then all the players from Malmo and Copenhagen and Oslo, everybody gets together, and when that sing song starts, by God, there's nowhere else you'd rather be.
Well, it's terrific stuff. Well, listen, John Delaney, thanks a million for joining us on the Why Big Football Show. We hope you have a great time in Poland with all the Irish fans, and no doubt there will be a big sing-song, and no doubt the team will do us proud. Thanks a million, John.
No, it's a pleasure. Anytime. I'd love to come on again. Thank you, boys.
FAI Chief Executive John Delaney, and as they were saying, JD likes to rock it out with a couple of Irish songs. No doubt there'll be a big sing-song in Poland. Lads, I want to talk, before we go, I want to talk a little bit about this mystery player. Rumours circulating, it'll all become clear when Giovanni Trapattoni announces the squad for the game. Jure, I want to come to yourself on this. I mean, we've seen the article in the Irish Times and that about a mystery player that has been, apparently he's told Trapattoni that he's not available for the Euros, or we don't know the full end of the story, but apparently they're having a problem. It's personal problems, but there's no idea. Like, people suggest it's Damien Duff. I mean, what do you think?
You know, kind of first and foremost, your heart goes out to them. You know, it's, they've played through the qualification campaign, and now it's came to the pinnacle of their careers, and it's, they're not going to make it. But for one of the senior players not to be there, it will be a massive blow to the team, do you know?
Yeah, and John, coming to you on this, I mean, it would kind of, it hits you like a freight train, even though we don't yet know who this senior player is. Do you have any inkling?
No, I don't really know, to be honest. He's an established player, but what's an established player, really? I mean, he was in a bunch of a few caps, you can say they're established. Maybe it would indicate they're more senior, but obviously, we'll find out next week if it is a real regular. But obviously, the hope is that it's not. You don't want to see anyone upset, but the hope is that it's not one of our important players, the likes of Donner and anybody like that, Robbie Keane. You kind of have to question why they bring it out in the first place without saying who it is. I mean, if you're going to find out, maybe wait until then and let us find out when it comes out in the media. But creating this thing around it, and I don't know if it's good for the player to have this thing.
Trap always seems to dangle things on a fishing rod in front of us like that.
Yeah, I suppose that's another reason I might be a bit sceptical as well about what's going to come out, or what actually is the problem, or is an excuse. It's just, for me, it's too early to say. I mean, you can speculate. I don't know, the lads might have drawn an idea about who it is, but I wouldn't really get too drawn into it until we actually find out. Because, you know, you could be here all day speculating that this, that and the other, or such a player was spotted, you know, coming out here, maybe he was depressed for some reason, but
yeah,
really we're not going to know until it comes out. You're just looking at tabloid type stories and it's just a guessing game, really. So we just have to wait and see and just hope that it isn't an important player, because we're lucky enough to have Dunn back playing again a couple of games before possibly he was originally going to. So we're going to need all our big players, and especially the players with experience. They're going to be very important. So we'll just have to, fingers crossed, it's not somebody too important.
Yeah, Philip, how about that? Fingers crossed it's not somebody too important. As John was saying, it's great to see the likes of Richard Dunn and all back, but this mystery around the player, Trap has kind of thrown us a fish here, which we don't know how to deal with. As Jer was saying, whatever it is or whoever it is, we feel sorry for them, whatever the problem is, but it's not something we need going into a Euros.
It's not, but it's a bizarre kind of a thing for a manager to say, because, you know, usually in the cases, whatever you say nothing. So it's unusual that something like this would come out, and it's also unusual that the player in question wouldn't be named. I wonder if it's another one of those things that kind of got lost in translation, as has happened before with cats and sacks and the rest of it, you know?
Yeah.
The other thing is that, you know, with these things, I take these things with a massive pinch of salt, right? I wouldn't have reported, I wouldn't have said anything about it if it was said to me, until such time as there's more to be said about it. Because what's very, very damaging in these situations is speculation. Because, you know, people lose the run of themselves, you know, maybe on a message board or a newspaper and say, well, this fella has a gambling problem, or I heard his wife drinks too much and that kind of thing. And that starts then, and that rumor then can sort of, you know, they grow legs, you know. And then people say, oh, you know, well, it wasn't him. Oh, there's no smoke without fire. And all of a sudden, you know, things do sort of take on a life of their own. And then they come back during the tournament. So if you take, you know, Damien Duff, you take Richard Dunne or whatever, somebody starts a rumour and then somebody mentions that in the pub in Poznan, and then it winds up on the back page of the Daily Star and we all wonder what happened, and the next day we're trying to play against Croatia.
Exactly, yeah, it's what you don't need.
Careful. Until such time as we see the squad and we hear the reasoning behind it, I'm as curious as the next man, I'd have to say that. There will be calls made trying to find out, but it's not a story I'd like to run with until I've heard from the player himself and from Trapp, because I think the speculation is unfair to all 23 plus the lads who won't be going.
Exactly. And Ger, coming to you, putting this speculation aside, any surprises going into the selection? I know Giovanni Trapattoni has said that James McLean is 90 to 95% certain of starting. He says he's going to be bringing four wingers, four central midfielders. Regarding the central midfield players, a lot of people say the four wingers will be McGeady, Duff, Hunt, McLean. The four central midfielders will be Whelan, Andrews, Fahey and Gibson, which would leave James McCarthy out. Do you think it's going to go like that?
Probably, you know, it's came from him straight away. But I don't know, do you think James McLean, is he too young to be going, or is he a rough diamond that we can bring and he can surprise us all when he gets there?
Yeah, but what about the argument, Jerry, you know, if he's good enough, if he's old enough?
Yeah, well, you know, it works for every other country in the world. You know, obviously with England back in the day with Wayne Rooney and Wilcott. So, you know, I mean, if they're good enough, they're old enough, and
yeah,
I would go with it. Yes, indeed.
Fair play to you, Jared. John, again, no surprises. Let's park the bus on this speculation, and no surprises. The team is as it is. I mean, that would suggest that James McCarthy will not get in, unless, of course, Keith Fahey. I know he is suffering with a pretty bad injury at the moment, and there's talk of him missing the playoffs and that, and hopefully he won't miss Ireland at the Euros and that. But if he was to, that would be James McCarthy in, I assume.
Yeah, well, it's an argument of who should play versus who will play.
Oh, yeah, I'm talking about who will play, yeah.
And unfortunately, it's not always the same thing. I don't know how bad that injury is, but I think in conform personally, I'd have McCarthy in there at the moment. He's kind of gone about his business well this season, but not setting the world alight, but consistent performance in centre midfield. He's comfortable in the role, he's comfortable in the holding role, which is exactly the type of player that Trapattoni likes, which makes it even more bizarre. He doesn't kind of fancy him. He's a good passer of the ball, and he's got the most Premier League experience, I think, over the last 2 years, more than anybody. And if you look at the stats, he's played more Premier League minutes than anybody else.
And we'd have to get Enda Brady on the old show, John, he'll have the old stats for you.
I saw this a while ago. I remember seeing that, and it is true. And he just looks more comfortable on the ball. To be honest, I'd probably have him in there ahead of Gibson. Gibson for me doesn't contribute enough in his general play for Everton or Manchester United. He's good in free kicks and things like that, but I don't think he'd dictate the play for us. In terms of who will play up, well, obviously Will and Andrews are shoe-ins, bar one of them is something wrong with them, maybe with the speculation, or bar injury to them too, definitely start. The other two, I think Gibson. I think Trapattoni likes Gibson. Once he likes a player, he usually will pick them, unless some weird circumstances come up. So then I suppose it probably is going to come down to Fahey versus McCarthy. As I said, I would have McCarthy in there myself if I had to pick, but he could pick Fahey. He's picked him before, and in fact he used to be able to double as a kind of left winger as well if he wanted, but he hasn't used him there in a while. And obviously we've a lot of wingers, and he said 90 to 95% sure that McLean can go. I don't think I'll believe it until he says 100% or until I see him on the play. But Yeah, McLean has to go, and I think we discussed this earlier about the fact that we're going to be playing teams who we're not going to have a lot of possession, especially against Spain. We'll be in our half or lock and soak under pressure.
So yeah, you said off air, John, that it could be. You said off air that it could be 85% possession to Spain.
Well, I said we could see a record of possession here, that because we don't keep. Ball. We like to give the ball to the opposition, which isn't the best trait, but we do it even at home. We've done it against Slovakia. We just kind of sit back. You know, it might suit us against the likes of Spain, because if you go out and try and beat them at their game, they will destroy it. But we're going to spend a lot of time in our own half kind of chasing players. So somebody like McLean would be able to stretch them. And we need some pace to kind of give the centre midfield a bit of a break and give the defence a bit of a break and get in behind and put some crosses in. Duff, for everything he's done for us, and he's having a great season for
really is.
But he's kind of he's adapted the game a little bit. He's not as much about pace. He's kind of more of a footballer now. Can bring other players into the game. Still very creative, but he wouldn't have pace like McLean would have, who you have to get in behind. So I think two good options there, whether the interchange or what. I mean, we know Duff can play on the right, so I think McLean and Duff could play together, or they probably won't now, but I think potentially they could, and with McGeady as well. I mean, we definitely have potential there to cause a few problems at times, but it's going to be a case of making the most out of the small possession we have and the limited attacks we have. So if we can do that, you know, we'll have a chance to defend well for the rest of the games. But I think it's it'll be interesting to see who he picks, but most of the squad, we can all tell who will be picked. With respect to Paul Green, I mean, I really don't think he should. We know he has a chance, but I don't think it's fair, if anything else, on the other players, if he manages to get in there ahead of McCarthy or even Fatty.
Yeah, and Philip, that would be very strange if, and Paul Green is a very good guy, and I know he's had issues with Derby. Derby are trying to keep him, but they've said he can go because the talks have broken down. And I think he said it this week himself that he'll be looking for more. He'd love to play in the Premier League, but he reckons Championship will be more likely for him at this stage. Considering James McCarthy was making the bench for Trapattoni's team towards the end of the qualifying campaign, you know, I think he was very close to coming on against Russia in Moscow. Could Green jump ahead of McCarthy in the queue if he's injured?
Well, I think he probably is ahead of McCarthy in the queue at the moment, because the way things have gone, you know. And I've often wondered, it's the $64,000 question in football, is, you know, how do you decide who the best 20 or 25 players are to take to a tournament? Because on recent form, McLean would be in any squad. On recent form, McCarthy would be in any squad.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you go back over the 2 years of qualifying, you know, what has McCarthy done on the training pitch that we haven't seen that put Green ahead of him? What has Green done on the training pitch or in a match or in a video the Trap has set that we haven't seen that puts him ahead of McCarthy? You know, it's those calls are very, very fine. And it could just be the fact that, you know, that Green gets on with it. We, you know, I mean, certain players, they take instruction very well. They do exactly what they're told. Our current first choice central midfield pairing, they don't do a whole lot creatively, but they don't put a foot wrong in Trap's eyes. He picks them every time because they do exactly what he tells them to do. And it might be that, you know, McCarthy did something, you know, back in the Jack Charlton area, you heard this of, you know, a guy might hold a ball for 2 minutes
and
suddenly was dropped. And maybe that's it. Maybe, you know, McCarthy has done, maybe he hasn't sort of lived up to Trap's expectations. To me, it'd be a shame because at the moment, on balance, he's certainly playing at a higher level, and you know he's doing a very, very consistent job there. It's not just Irish fans that think that; British football journalists have said the same thing. Maybe he's the man for Rio. Maybe he's the man for the next World Cup.
But are we not in danger then, Philip? Just before we wrap the show up, are we not in danger then of a situation happening? What happened when the very end of Jack's tenure as Irish boss and Mick McCarthy first took over? He took over, he had to literally bring in a fresh squad because it was a very old type squad, and the younger players, the younger Irish players that were up and coming, hadn't had really their chance and they hadn't been blooded in. Could that be a danger?
I think that's the thing. But, I mean, again, that's the problem with Trapp being, having the contract now for the 2014 World Cup already. His thing is the next match where 3 points are there to be had, right? His next thing is the opening game against Croatia. Forget the friendlies. Forget all that. That is what he's preparing for now. Everything else doesn't matter. It doesn't exist. Winning that game, getting something out of that game is all that matters. Building for the future, forget it. 2014, forget it. Making James McCarthy into an international central midfielder, forget it. None of that matters. The 3 points against Croatia are all that matters. And as long as we have that, it's going to be exactly as you said, the likes of Richie Sadley or Mark Kennedy, all these guys who were coming through at the time, who were left sitting on the bench in the Charlton era and then weren't ready when they were called. It would be lovely to see McCarthy brought along the way Walcott was brought along. Even if he never kicks a ball, it helps a player to be in that atmosphere. I don't think it's going to happen. I think Green will be in there because Green will do what he's told.
Right, fair enough. Before we go, Ger, if any guys, anybody up near the in the west of Ireland would like to get in touch with yourself or, you know, the western branch in general, what's the best thing for them to do? Because no doubt we have a lot of supporters there, and what you guys are doing, you guys are doing some terrific work in terms of organising buses to games and all that kind of thing. What's the best way for people to get in touch?
Well, I'll give you our email address now. It's the RISSCW Secretary, and that's a bit of a mouthful,
RISSCW Secretary at gmail.com.
Yep.
Okay, well, what I'll do is I'll put it on the web post for the Why Big Football Show, so anybody that sees it can check it out and get in touch with yourself for that. And well done on the great work you've seen. John Delaney even praised you guys. Lads, I'm afraid we're out of time here on the Why Big Football Show. What a great show we've had with FAI Chief Executive John Delaney on. I was also joined by John, Jer and Philip, our man in Stockholm. Lads, thanks a million, and I look forward to the pleasure of your company at the same time next week when we'll know who's going to the Euros, we'll know who's on the plane. Thanks, lads.
Thanks, Dave.
Cheers, David.
Thanks, Dave. See
you. We're on the plane, Poland, Ukraine. Let's have a ball, let's have the crack. They say that Spain will claim the fame. No way, Jose will send them back. Come on, the boys in green, use your inner Gary Breen. There's one in every single man. Come on, the boys in green, Irish football team's a dream. Bring us back the cup, we know you can. Italia, we brought your dad, but careful now, cause it's a trap. Croatia, well sorry lads, but when we scored, it's red and white, check it for ya. Come on, the boys in green, use your inner Gary Green. There's one in every single man. Come on, the boys in green, Irish football team supreme. Bring us back the cup, we know you can. Back home be singing, come on, come on, the lad.